Hi, my name's Al. I'm an alcoholic. And, you know, I just really want to congratulate the cake people who all, you know, took their cakes. I know a lot of them, known them for a lot of years. And there's a lot of people in this room, too, that I've known for a lot of years that have helped me out a lot, you know. And, you know, that's what this program really is one alcoholic helping another. And so, yeah, I just wanted to get that out of the way in case I forgot that. And I'll go on what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. And, you know, what it was like for me is, like Freddie so lovely talked about, I grew up in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, kind of a child of the 70s. You know, it was a great time to live in Pittsburgh, really, you know, in the 70s. We won 2 World Series and 4 Super Bowls. And drank a lot of Iron City beer, smoked weed, and, you know, did that. I lived in a neighborhood. My grandparents are from Italy, both sets. And they lived, when they came to this country, they lived in, like, tenements. And they just, you know, when I grew up, my parents all lived in, like, a neighborhood that just was right across the street, right across the river from that in Pittsburgh. Right as soon as you got across the river, there was a neighborhood called Brookline. And there was about 40 of my cousins that lived there. And, you know, we all lived in this community. And the only thing is with my family is now my family's extreme. They're either complete maniacs or they're like saints. And there's nothing in between, you know? And they're always getting in trouble, or they're just out, or they're helping old ladies cross the street. You know, there's no in between with those guys. And you know, for me, my dad was, my dad was one of those first bodybuilder guys in the late '50s, early '60s, of tearing phone books in half, and, you know, lifting car. They show him on TV lifting a car off the ground, a Volkswagen, or picking things up, or. And he would take me to these shows, these American sportsman shows, where his friends would be fighting kangaroos or wrestling bears or whatever, you know. Really like real macho, tough guy stuff, you know. And that was always going on. My dad was like a raging maniac, too, on steroids, you know. And beating up all the neighbors, stuff like that, you know. And my mom, you know, and they got married when they were really young. They got married at like 17, 18 years old. And my mom was really young. And so, you know, I kind of got pushed around a little bit with my relatives. I was like the first grandchild. And I hung out with my grandmother a lot. And my cousins a lot. And so for me, you know, my mom, she's really like a religious person. She's like, you know, she's like 5 foot tall. She's Sicilian, you know, and she's scary, you know. She weighs like 100 pounds, you know, and she's still doing scary stuff. Last time I was over her house, she has all the saints all lined up, and if they don't do what she wants, she makes them face the wall, you know. She sends me like religious artifacts to bury in the yard and stuff like that. Now, I have never caught her killing chickens or anything yet, and sacrificing them or anything yet, but she has that effect on people, you know? And so I never want her mad at me, to tell you the truth. So, you know, I was always the one getting in trouble from the first time I took a drink. You know, 12 years old, I think I was delivering some newspapers or something. It was like a holiday, and, you know, Christmas Eve, and living in a neighborhood like that, you know, everybody wants to give you a shot. You can go into a bar and get a shot. You can't stay there and drink, but people give you a beer or a drink because it's Christmas, you know, or whatever. And that's how it all kind of started, I think. I wanted to fit in with everybody that was acting that way. I wanted to fit in with my cousins. You know, there was a whole bunch of kids I grew up with. We all stood on the corner, spitting through our teeth, smoking cigarettes, and saying, fuck. You know, and that's what we did, you know. I mean, and so I wanted to be just like them guys. And the area that I grew up with wasn't really like, you know, a very affluent neighborhood. I mean, I grew up with people. There was like my best friend's parents had like eight kids, three bedroom and one bath house. And his dad was an iron worker, and he worked 7 days a week. He had a great job, made a lot of money, and worked every single day. You know, out in the snow doing pipe or whatever. And I grew up in that. And those people really taught me a lot of work ethic back then. You know, I knew people like that a lot. So it was like a big deal to get a job as a kid for me. And I did get a job. I remember how happy I was getting my working papers at 14 and, you know, working in the produce yards and, you know, doing all that stuff. And all my friends, too, you know, it was all about like, you know, you're not taking money from your mom or anything. I'm all, no, you know, you got to work for yourself, be your own man. But the problem, you know, the privileges of that, I always thought were just being able to drink and hang out, want to hang out with the older crowd, do what they do. But being an alcoholic of my type, you know, I could never drink like a normal person. I could never go out and have a few beers. I was always the one, and I had some friends, too, that, you know, we were completely out of control, you know, and I would try not to drink. I would smoke weed or something, you know, and my parents were pretty happy I was smoking weed. They could see that, you know, they're all, leave him alone, he's quiet, he ain't saying nothing, and then I'd get thirsty, you know, and it would all go away, you know, and I'd be in trouble, and I just had a knack for getting in trouble. I still do, though, too, you know, and my family never thought I had a drinking problem or anything. They just all thought I had a behavioral problem, and, you know, I just fit in with rest of my relatives, you know, and even today, I feel like that werewolf or something, you know, the moon's coming up, and I feel like, you know, a hair's sticking up or something, I'm ready to go, you know, and so I got myself in enough trouble, I had to join the military. So I joined the Navy. And it was cool. You know, I had 6 months to say goodbye, all that. Nobody would do anything to me. I knew the chief of police lived three doors down from my house. Him and my dad had grown up together, played Little League. And I could get away with murder, really, for that 6 months. And then I went to the Navy because I was going to straighten up my life. And the first day I was there, I had to take a urinalysis, and I came up positive for cocaine. And I tried lying my way out of it like all alcoholics would. You know, I told him some girl had it in her mouth at my going-away party and kissed me with it. And I never did anything like that before. I know nothing. And because I had taken some oath along the way, and I was supposed to have given them true statements or something, and I had, like, fraudulently enlisted or something. It was worse than taking the drug, you know? And anyway, it all worked out for the most part. You know, the way it worked out is the way it's always worked out in my life, to be honest with you, is the guy who was the legal officer that was prosecuting me, he was looking through my records, and he seen where I grew up. And he asked me if I knew this lady, like Mrs. Bokiki. I'm all, sure, I know her. She was my homeroom teacher for 4 years. And my parents were really big. You could get in trouble about a lot of things, skipping school and everything. But if you talk back to an adult, you know, they would beat your ass. My dad was pretty strict about that, you know. And he kind of felt like it was a reflection on him. And so for me, I was always respectful to this lady. I might have not showed up to her class and I didn't do what she wanted me to do, but I never gave her any lip. And so sure, I go, yeah, I know her. And it turned out it was his mother. So he called, and she was just an Italian lady in the neighborhood. I mean, he called her up on over the weekend, and he's like, yeah, my mom knows you and everything. And he goes, but you got to come up with more than this. You know, I go, okay, I smoked marijuana four times in my life, and I had cocaine once. And that was it. They let me go, and boom, I go back in there. I go finish boot camp. I go to A school. Everybody's drinking and everything. Everything's going pretty good, you know. And then my behavior starts out. And the problem about the military is they start writing that shit down when you get in trouble, you know. They start keeping a record about this, you know. They just don't forgive and forget, you know. And And it just started adding up. And, you know, and I got in a really bad fist fight at a stadium, at San Diego Stadium here, when the Padres were playing. And it was when you used to be allowed to bring containers in there. And so for me, I got arrested. I ended up in the felon pen. I didn't really know what even happened, but I was in there for like 9 days in the felon pen, and I kept calling my friends, collecting, going, "What happened?" And they're all, "Don't worry, it ain't your fault." And I'm all, you know, my bail's like $100,000, and they're waiting to see if this guy's going to be okay before they won't release me to the Navy. And so anyway, that was kind of my start of going to AA. You know, I kind of volunteered to go to AA after that. You know, I remember, you know, somebody asking me, you know, "You can go to AA or you can go to jail." I'm thinking, AA, you know, AA, how about the Hare Krishnas? Anything but AA, you know. I know I don't have a drinking problem. And so, I'm all, "What jail would that be, Your Honor?" You know, but I ended up going to AA. And I had to take urinalysis for 18 months. And I had to go take Antabuse. You know, every morning I'd have to take Antabuse. I'm 19 years old, I'm taking Antabuse, and I'm once a week I'm taking a urinalysis. And that was one of the most humiliating things I think I had to do, was do urinalysis. Because they would just stand there and watch me, and I'd try to pee on the side of the bottle and hand it to them, "Here, you want it? Here." And, you know, that alcoholic, that defiance, you know, that we have. And I did it, and, you know, they kind of caught on to what I was doing with my Antabuse. I was tonguing them and spitting them out, so they start dissolving it in water, and I had to drink it in front of them. And, you know, long story short, I didn't really get any time in here until I was about 21. And at 21, I finally got sober. I got off probation. I got almost 2 years of sobriety. And I just didn't think AA was for me. I was still looking around the room thinking, like, I don't fit in. It seems like everybody here is Irish or something. You know, I don't really see that, how I'm fitting in here. And everybody seems so different, or seemed like I was in the VFW or something. I don't know what's going on, you know. But I had that mind. I could find fault in all situations. You know, I had been grown up with that mind, and I had been raised in it, and I had nurtured this mind that said, you know, if Christ walked through the door, I could be, "You smelly hippie, get a haircut, what's up with those sandals and those robes?" You know, no matter what was going on, I could find fault in all situations. And I could look across the room at a guy and think, you know, this guy is the biggest a-hole in the whole world, and the next day the guy would be saying something that would be saving my life. And, you know, I got in a lot, like I said, by the time I was done with probation, I had to go to a staffing meeting. And there's another guy I know in the program that had done it too. And the problem was, they didn't really feel like I was, you know, giving myself to this simple program, or their simple program, you know, the Navy's program. And so I went in front of like all these counselors. There was probably 8 counselors, you know, and they were saying, "You're not talking to us about your drug uses, and you're not talking about this and that and everything else." And the night before, I had gone to a meeting in their van, and there was a guy at the meeting named Sherman. Joey knows Sherman, and Sherman opened up the book and said, "Oh, Al, it says you only got to tell that stuff to God and another person." So I went into that staffing, and if I didn't pass the staffing, I was getting a big chicken dinner, you know, the bad conduct discharge. But I went in there, and I opened up that book, and I read it to him. I said, "It says right here, I met this guy last night at a meeting. He's my sponsor now, and, you know, he says I only got to tell this stuff to God and another person." And it, like, rendered this panel of people, like, speechless. They really couldn't come up with another thing to say. And we just all packed up and left. The meeting lasted like 2 minutes. And so I went back to my thing and, you know, did my time and got out of the service. And, you know, my sobriety date is November 2nd, 1985. And I had almost 2 years, and I went back out again. and because I didn't think AA was worth it. I didn't think I was getting what I was supposed to get here. I just thought, hey, I'm not going to have problems anymore if I'm going to be sober or whatever. I just wasn't convinced to my innermost self. And, you know, I went out. There was some outlaw motorcycle. I lived in Ocean Beach. Some outlaw motorcycles came by, guys I knew from the old days kind of, and they're all, hey, you want to go to a Halloween party? They gave us a couple LSD, and we went to the meeting. I mean, I went to the party, and I was on my way to an AA meeting. But and 3 days later, I came down from everything, and you know, November 2nd is my birthday. Wish it would have been November 1st, All Saints Day, but I guess I couldn't have that day. And you know, since that time, you know, that's how I got here. And then since that time, you know, you know, AA has really changed my life. I came in here, I really had surfed in here on a big wave of my own bullshit. And it just kept piling on top of me. I had court cases to deal with and a lot of stuff to deal with here. And so for me, I just had to keep coming here. And I kept coming to that place I either had to change my attitude or change my sobriety date. And thank God I kept changing my attitude over and over again. You know, I didn't come in here. I didn't do the steps out of my own virtue. I didn't do volunteer work out of my own virtue. I did it because I didn't have a choice. You know, I remember even doing my 4-step with my sponsor. You know, and you know, he laid it all out for me. He's like, there's 3 parts of the 4-step. He's all anger, fear, and sexual conduct. And I'm all, well, I ain't mad at anybody, and I'm not afraid of nobody, and I didn't do anything, you know, and he's all, well, you know, he goes, I want to see at least 25 people on there. You don't have to be perfect, but I go, 25 people. I go, I'm not mad at anybody. He goes, what about that guy you were calling him a mother effer the other day? And this guy over here, he goes, anybody's name begins with mother? Put them on the list. And so, you know, I had to start with that because I didn't know what a resentment was. I was not comfortable telling on myself. In fact, I had built my part of my brain has been built around denying everything. You know, I've got this attitude that I could hit a parked car and it's not my fault. And I can even turn it into a victim situation like how Freddie does, you know. You know, the city built the street too narrow, the car's too big. You know, that guy parked too far away from the curb, you know, and it can go on and on and on, and that's the kind of mind I had to deal with here, you know. So no matter whatever happens, it's never my fault, because if I just look at it the right way, and I can get some friends around me to co-sign that, too. Yeah, that's right. But, you know, it wasn't easy here, coming to face-to-face with myself. And when I started writing my 4-step, you know, I remember how hard it was, because you know, he gave me, you know, he laid it out in these columns, and I would try to, like, I put the person's name, and then I would write why I was resentful to them, and it would seem like take up this much of the paper, and then would it affect it took up that much. And I would try to put the next person's name on there, and I just didn't have enough room. And he's all, you know, hey, this is America. Everybody can have their own piece of paper. You know, we got a good around here. So I had to do it that way. You know, I was pretty afraid of that. It was hard. I couldn't find the right pencil, couldn't, you know. There was always a reason not to do that. But I'll tell you what, the most scariest thing in that step I have ever done has been that 9th step. And one of the first ones I've ever had. I mean, I didn't mind. I mean, I didn't like it, but writing checks ain't a big deal. Not really, you know. Or saying, you know, trying to say you're sorry to somebody, which my sponsor corrected me. And that he goes, I had to tell them the exact nature of my wrongs. And I had known people that had done their 4-step, and they got to burn it. I didn't get to burn mine. He made me make a list of the people I had harmed, and I had to go with them. Well, let's burn it. He's all, no. So I had to go tell these people the exact natures of my wrongs. And I had to sit across the table from people that I had, you know, spit on, broke their windows, acted in tremendous, you know, hostility towards them, stabbed them with a fork, one guy stabbed with a fork, you know, called them all kinds of names, character assassinated them, and sitting across the table telling this to somebody is about the most humiliating, you know, humbling thing I've ever had to do, and then asking them, how can I set this right with you? I'll tell you what, that changed my behavior. I really didn't want to get myself in that situation again, you know, for a lot of reasons. And, I'm glad I don't have to live like that today. But I had to learn. I had to grow up in sobriety. I'm one of those people that I got surrendered by sobriety. I didn't come in here surrendered or willing to even be surrendered. I just came in here and kept trying to live sober, and I got surrendered here. Religious stuff has been pretty crazy for me. I'm glad I've tried so many different things. I grew up Catholic, and then, I thought I'd try something different. So I got sober in Ocean Beach, and I started hanging out with some of the metaphysical things. And then that didn't seem to work. And I got married, and my wife was a born-again Christian. So then I got dipped in the bay and started tithing. And then she wanted a divorce. Then I wanted my money back, And then I start saving up to be Jewish for a while. And I went out there with the Indians for a while in those sweat lodges, and they had a lot of the same craziness that they have in AA here, and I thought, that's not right. So now I'm kind of practicing Buddhism. I go to yoga every day, that's my thing, and that's what I do now. So, I don't know where I'm going to be next year. It could be the Great Pumpkin. I don't know, but I keep searching, and relationships in Alcoholics Anonymous have just been, crazy. I mean, we're all crazy here too, and it's so funny. I mean, as a kid, I remember being like 19. It seemed like everybody over 35 wanted to take me home when I was 19, And I can remember, some of my crazy relationships. And I was just, water seeks its own level, What they say, crazy in the head, crazy in bed. Relationships have been different for me. I got divorced in AA, and I was in so much pain, I acted appropriately. Do you ever get to that place like you have no more ideas what to do, and you do the right thing because your sponsor's telling you to? And so when I got divorced, my wife gave me a list of things that she wanted. And I looked at this list, and I showed it to my sponsor, and he says, that doesn't seem fair. You should give her more than that. So I gave her more than that. And it took all the fight out of my divorce. I just gave it to her. I didn't know what else to do. I was in so much pain. I mean, I was really hurting at that time. So I was willing. And it was one of the best things that I've ever done. Me and my ex-wife couldn't be closer. We are closer now than when we were married. I mean, her husband's not very fond of me, but he's a Jewish guy. He doesn't like my jokes. I go to her house regularly. She lives in Pittsburgh, and she always invites me to stay there. I think she says that to me just to piss him off, though, But we're close, We got like an understanding, a connection that a lot of people don't have, it's a nice thing for me. There's another thing, too, that I've learned over the last few years, and that's being true to yourself here. And how important that is. And I think when I heard it and saw it on the tokens, it took me a long time to really understand what that meant for me. And it's taken me a long time to live a life like that. I've always been able, one person, to be able to reach out and get a lot of attention or be popular or be any of that. But I never really was true to myself. And this year, I've really worked a lot on being true to myself and what's right for me. And it may not be what's right for you, And that's what I love. Another thing I like about Alcoholics Anonymous is everybody can be right here. It's a big room full of a lot of opinionated people. Maybe some of us are assholes. I'm one. Everybody here can be right. If somebody says you want to go to morning meetings, go to morning meetings. You're right. If you're not drinking or you want to go to afternoon meetings or evening meetings, you are right. You want to go to 5 meetings a week, 3 meetings a week, 20 meetings a week, you're right. If that works for you, you're right. And that's why Alcoholics Anonymous works, I believe, is because everybody here can be right. And that's a good deal. That's a really good deal. That's why I believe we've lasted as long as we have here. You know, I've gone to Founders Day in Akron before, and Pittsburgh's not too far away. So when people come in to visit me, I always try to take them up there to where this all started. And it's an amazing place to go. It's also next to the Football Hall of Fame, too. And we hit that. But, you know, I've said my prayers on Dr. Bob's bed and, you know, seen where they wrote the book. And, you know, we're not people that would naturally mix, you know. We really aren't. I mean, you know, especially with the attitudes in my, like I told you that I had when I came in here, the thing is, too, is I know today, it took me a long time to realize this, you guys already probably know this, but if I hang around people that are doing what I want in my life, I seem to do the same thing. So if you want to go to school, hang out with people that are going to school. You know, if you want to hang out, if you don't want to smoke, hang out with people that don't smoke. You know, if you want to go to the gym, hang out with people that are going to the gym. I mean, you're all right here. Whatever it is, you're right. You know, if you want to hang out in the coffee shops and smoke cigarettes and not go to work, you're right. You have a right to have that life. You know, you're right. You know, for me, I don't do that. You know, I was like one of these people. I had grown up a different way or whatever. It doesn't make me any righter than you. But, you know, I worked really hard. I always worked two or three jobs all through sobriety. You know, I worked in a machine shop by day, and I was the VIP downtown at night at a lot of the nightclubs. And I was the guy opening up the Cristal. And I had never drinking anything like that. You know, that's with like 12 years of sobriety I did that up until. And I never drank it. In fact, Christmas Eve one time, they gave me a bottle of Dom Perignon. No, New Year's Eve, they gave me a bottle of Dom Perignon, and I tried to sell it. It was like 10-15 minutes. Nobody wanted it, and so I ended up shaking it up and spraying it on the whole crowd of people, you know. And I don't think I ever drank any kind of wine other than Chianti that had a grape in it or whatever, you know. So, you know, I mean, it wasn't a great loss, but I'll tell you, growing up, coming into AA young, I always felt like I had missed something. You know, I felt like I was missing something. Like, you know, I had gone to school and I had got the career that I had wanted here. And you guys helped me all through the way. I mean, just find somebody that did that. And what happened was, I remember having about 16 years. And that's when I really realized that my life was better because I had the disease of alcoholism than it would have ever been if I didn't. You know, I was going to work with people that had two or three friends or whatever. And I had so many people. I lived in such a big, friendly world. Put it in my head, but in reality I did, you know? And I was doing this, and I was doing that. And, you know, today I get to live my dreams. My dreams aren't your dreams, but I get to live my dreams. My dreams are I have season tickets to the Steelers. You know, and Freddie's going back with me again this year. You know, I've been to the last six Super Bowls. I just love that stuff. It's never too late to have a happy childhood, you know? I know some people in the music industry. I got to do some things with them guys, and they're all sober. And, you know, I've been to meetings all over the country. I mean, today I consider my home group any meeting that I'm at. That's my home group. And, you know, because I live in this world today. I love that they do it differently in different places. Believe me, I love California. I can say God and fuck in the same sentence. I really do. But when I go to other places, you're not allowed to swear. You know, they take it very offensively. And so I don't really agree with it, but I go along with the program. I give myself to this simple program. I don't try to change a whole room full of people. That would have been my old behavior, you know. They're not doing it right, resisting it or whatever. And, you know, today I have a good, you know, about 6 years ago, I hate to tell people how old I am. I like to lie about my age. I don't like the idea that I'm 51, though. I really don't. I know it's sad, but I hate it. And about 6 years ago, I retired through my own contributions. And from working two or three jobs my whole life to not working at all, I never had depression before until I stopped working, and I had to deal with a lot of issues there, you know, and I had to go see somebody, and I realized that I had to have structure in my life for my own sanity. So today, I get up every morning at 4:30. It's my choice, but I go to the dog park with my dog every morning at 4:30. He insists, then I go to yoga after that, you know, and then I start my day, I've been taking on more and more. I have a bunch of, you know, investments, and I take on more and more responsibility on my apartments, and I'm learning all kinds of stuff. You know, I've had problems with contractors. I know there's a lot of them in here or whatever, and, you know, that's okay. You know, God's leading me to where I'm supposed to be. And now I'm good, and there's nobody that puts windows in better than me. There's nobody that, you know, I've been putting entry doors in, and I got my own sprayer now. And, you know, the girl that I'm in, one of these really spiritual young girls, she's my yoga teacher, you know, and she is unbelievable. And she's left like a corporate power thing, and she's opened up her own studio. So she's seen some of the work that I had done and everything, and she's all, can you help me? So, you know, I sprayed her ceilings black for her. I'm putting in the flooring for her, you know, and, you know, there's no charge. I'm not doing it for a fee. I don't need to charge her. And she's like, you can have yoga for life. I'm like, oh. But I get fed there, you know. It's one person helping another really here, you know, and I try to have a good life here. You know, the thing is I'm responsible. I'm no longer a victim. You know, whoever I let in my life, I'm responsible for letting that person in my life. And it took me a long time to realize that, too. If somebody's not going to be responsible in their own life, they're not going to be responsible in your life. You know, and I need to really keep that in mind, you know, when I let people in. I really try not to rent to people that are in the program or do business. It's kind of like dealing with your relatives, you know. And I never have any problems unless it's somebody I know, you know. For me, that's a lot of what I have to say here. That's about a lot of what I had to learn here. Let's see, what else can I tell you about steps, relationships, jobs? You know, my first job I got. I remember getting my first job, and I went to work every day for 7 years. And I knew I was going to get fired. Every day I went to work thinking I was going to get fired. And I was so afraid of that, you know. And after 7 years, I was right. And it wasn't all that bad. You know, I got 2 checks and got to go home early that day, you know. Even driving down the freeway, too, now. I noticed that the more I let people in, the less I get cut off. You ever notice that? So that's basically it. You know, I'm going to end probably a couple minutes early, and I just want to say thank you for being here. Thank you for helping me stay sober. You know, my goal is to try to get 75 years of sobriety. You know, I got to live a long time, and, you know, I want to live to 100. I'm all booked up until then. I've been telling God that, you know. I've got all the plans. I'm all booked. So a lot of things to do, and go Steelers. Thank you.